Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Wednesday, June 15th, 2016. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
Well, it's been a wild and crazy day, and we have lots to talk about today after the going into the second and third segment of the program today, because the first segment today, we have Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs joining us, but a lot of crazy things going on to talk about financially and why gold is up $8.30 right now at $1,294.80. Silver's up 16 at $1,761. Platinum was up 2 at $981, and palladium was down 3 at $536. The USDX today was trading a little bit weaker, 0.24 at 94.67. Crude oil was down big today, 1.15 at 47.34. You can kiss $50 oil plus. That's going away. That's not going to be around anymore. You're going to see a lot of pressure on that and with the economy and so forth. But let's go ahead and get to the paper markets. The market closed. The markets were up most of the day. They had a reversal after Janet Yellen came out and nixed the rate increase probably for the next 2 years. The Dow was down 33 points at 17,640. Should have been down 334 points. But the NASDAQ was down 8, 48.34. The S&P down 3, 2,071. The 10-year yield, that was below 160. It did come back. And it was right now down just 0.01 at 1.60%. The euro was up strong, 0.47 at 113. And all the European and Asian markets were stronger overnight, but they've just been hammered, for the past five trading days. They've been hit hard. So only natural for them to have a little bit of a comeback, as slight as it was. And pressure will probably be on them overnight. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. We have Wendy Wilson from Apothecary Herbs joining us, as she does every Wednesday. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody. And hello, Al. How's everybody?
Just great, thanks.
Good. Awesome. I thought we'd talk about you and the biological market today. We've heard from the scientific community and the pharmaceutical companies have been designing some very different distribution route to vaccinate a lot of people and animals. And this is the aerosol sector of vaccine treatment. The argument they presented is that science, they say, with regard to the aerosol vaccinations, it targets the root of infection. So they give us an example. For tuberculosis, the infection normally is breathed into the lungs from contaminated droplets coughed out by someone with tuberculosis. So the aerosol vaccine, they say, seems to be a good idea. It's the primary route for the infection to the pulmonary and infected lungs. So they are theorizing that aerosol tuberculosis vaccines would be more efficient than a serum injected version. So that's the theory. We're also told that vaccine, by spraying it into the air, people actually will breathe in the disease, permeating the lung tissue, the mucosa, for full coverage within just two breaths. So aerosol vaccinations, the powdered kind, are a big deal. And we're going to get into the financial sector of this in just a second. Now, the concept, I think, of crop dusting and the entire planet with vaccines is really the brainchild of Barry Bloom, PhD, Dean of Harvard School of Public Health, and Harvard bioengineers David Edwards and Yung Ling Wong. These three came up with the aerosol nano microparticle TB tuberculosis vaccine. Currently, 100 million children on the planet get the injectable version of this vaccine. So the World Health Organization, Al Melanie, stated in 2015, we have 8.6 million cases of TB globally, generates about 1.3 million deaths. They also state there's a lot of people with what they call mycobacteria TB, that they're already infected. So they say a third of the population on the planet already has this, and there's a 10% risk of a full-blown outbreak of tuberculosis. So, you know, and then we get into the fact that, you know, they lose a lot of controls when they vaccinate by aerosol, and we'll get to that in a second. Now, we're told that the industry, the pharmaceutical industry, has been really developing for 13 years, cultivating this mycobacterium for tuberculosis. They cultivated it in cattle to make the human vaccine, and it's called Bacillus Calmette-Guerin, or BCG for short, and they created that in 1974. So the industry is stating that although the vaccine is given to children, it doesn't really offer a whole lot of protection for adults. And revaccinating adults, increases the risk of adverse events. So, Al, they're going to want to aerosol you with tuberculosis vaccine. Are you okay with that?
I'm not a very trusting person when it comes to government spraying things into the atmosphere.
Right.
You know, I mean, if we're going to crop dust in order to allegedly get a tuberculosis, we already have a problem with creating super viruses by dispersing too many antibiotics. Mm-hmm. I don't see how this isn't going to risk creating some super strain of tuberculosis. Could we eliminate all tuberculosis, or will we just make things worse?
Pretty much was eradicated from the states anyway, but now you have everyone coming over the borders that are bringing it back, and it's a new problem.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Well, yeah, but the thing is adults have it. And so the vaccine, it was really created to be given to children. It doesn't seem to be as effective when given later in life. So what they're doing is they've gone back to the drawing board, and they are coming up with this new TB vaccine for children and adults. They say is more robust, offers a strong cell-mediated immune system response. So they've got a couple of candidates in the works. They're, you know, it's brewing in the cauldron, if you will. So two TB vaccines are currently in phase two testing. One's in Germany, one's in South Africa. So they're testing it there. Both of them contain dangerous recombinant proteins, also called fusion proteins or adjuvants. And we've gone over this before. Adjuvant just means a contaminated vial of vaccine of bacteria. That's what an adjuvant is. So under phase one tests, they say they combined an additional four bacteria adjuvants to the mix. And researchers and doctors are trying to design a tuberculosis vaccine for those that are already infected with the TB pathogen, because it's long been understood that if you have TB in your body, that you suffer a greater risk if they give you a tuberculosis vaccine, and you run the risk of it's called Koch phenomenon, which translates into death by TB vaccine. Okay.
You mean the vaccine, so, if you've already got the vaccine in your system,
mm-hmm.
you've got the tuberculosis in your system, excuse me, and yeah. if you wind up being exposed to a tuberculosis vaccine, it might actually amplify the tuberculosis that's already in your system that's maybe yeah. dormant.
Yeah,
and
that's
the problem. Perhaps...
Yeah, that's a problem they're working around, you know. But once uh-huh. they figure this out, they also want to make a vaccine for HIV patients, too. Can you imagine? But, you know, since tuberculosis, you know, is an infection that you breathe in, they think the aerosol is going to be the best bet. Now, there's a report, Al, Melanie, from the Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News. They stated that globally, the global vaccine market is in the billions of dollars. And the World Health Organization reports, it confirmed in 2016 that vaccines were netting the industry $56 billion a year. Depending on the production method and the vaccine, it kind of influences the cost of it. But according to the research, aerosol versions of vaccines do not require trained medical personnel to administer them. So the deployment of the aerosol vaccine depends on the size of the population. Therefore, facilitating a deployment of this vaccine could be by plane, crop duster, for instance, or another plane, by individual drone or small nebulizer like Asthmetics. What do they use for asthma? So these aerosol versions offer the pharmaceutical company potential savings with regard to field testing in animals and humans. The distribution is much more economical. It's a powdered version. It doesn't need refrigeration. It's transported in lightweight containers compared to the serum version that needs refrigeration and is in glass vials. And doctors just love this idea. They say, you know, an aerosol is cheaper, faster, more acceptable to children, no sharp injury. They'll just love it, right? Well, there are some safety concerns. Hold on to your seat here. Scientific research has exposed a safety concern with aerosol delivery of vaccines, and here it is. There seems to be a problem when vaccines are delivered to the body through the intranasal route. In 2009, this was published in the Polos 1 and PubMed publications in 2009. They said the scientific community and the pharmaceutical companies have known that using aerosol vaccines, which are genetically altered with mutant agents called psychotines, such as GM E. coli for an adjuvant. We've talked about that before. So when they have all these bacterial adjuvants to elicit a better immune system response, it causes facial paralysis called Bell's palsy. Okay.
Sounds like a device to make that zombie thing come true. You know, everybody's going to be walking around. I'm not a zombie. I just got exposed to a vaccine. That's all. I can't smile.
Well, it makes sense
to
me. It makes sense to me because all these vaccines seem to have a neurological effect, you know, of some kind, whether it's autism, sudden infant death syndrome, strokes, you know, learning you know, impairments. It seems to, you know, because it goes to the brain. It just does. So this Bell's palsy reaction of facial paralysis occurred when they used the aerosol version of the flu vaccine called nasal flu, right? So the aerosol vaccines with the adjuvants are called heat-liable toxins in the industry. And you want to breathe that in like snuff, right? Ugh. So this facial paralysis also occurred when they tested the HIV aerosol and the TB vaccine aerosol. And they state they don't know why the paralysis happens. However, research is continuing to develop, get this, an aerosol for the measles vaccine, which we're told is stronger than the injectable one. So aerosol measles vaccines being tested in South Africa. And Mexican school children have been tested on them. They say it's completely safe. They are seeking life.
They always
life.
Do, though, don't they?
I'm sorry?
I mean, they always do. I mean, what did we have?
Yeah.
Thalidomide? That was completely safe.
Yeah.
We got
yeah,
a lot
all
of
these recalls.
Completely
yeah.
safe, and if they're not, they keep the money and we keep the disease.
Right. So they're seeking licensing for the TB aerosol vaccine after testing it on the animals, and they're also looking for the aerosol vaccine for the other ones as well, the tuberculosis as well. And here's the thing. When you vaccinate through an aerosol, through the pulmonary, it goes right into the blood system pretty quickly, faster than a serum injection. So this is the fastest way to poison, infect, or change cell DNA. Is through an aerosol vaccination. So they're seeking also down the road to have vaccines for all kinds of diseases, even heart disease, diabetes, and cancer. Now, here's the interesting financial part. According to the Genetic Engineering Biotechnology News, the pediatric vaccine marketplace is just the beginning, and now attention is being turned to the overlooked vaccine care for adults. So according to their report, the vaccine industry is one of the biggest growing industries in the pharmaceutical complex, although news outlets say otherwise. So, for instance, the industry grew by 11% in 2015, selling $28 billion in vaccine product. And according to Global Health Vaccine Center of Innovation and the Disease Research Institute, it cost about $500 million to bring a vaccine to market. Therefore, the industry is looking for those cheaper, faster ways to vaccinate and to make products. So the financial.
For all this?
Well, the financial experts state that the vaccine sector of the pharmaceutical industry showed a revenue growth overall of 10 times the other products sold by pharmaceuticals. So this projected growth of vaccine products is expected to expand to about 7.6% through 2022. And so currently 56.6% of the vaccines are for the pediatric market, but that's going to change. They want to make the adult vaccine marketplace just as lucrative as the pediatric one. So and you've heard those reports where, you know, the kids go to college and they get vaccinated, then they come down with the disease. You've heard that lately, right?
Can't say that I have, tell you the truth, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, if you're going to live on campus, that you have to get updated on your vaccines. And so then the kids are coming down with it, and these kids were already vaccinated. They can't explain it. But now they've come up with an explanation. Baylor College of Medicine in Texas said that overweight and obese students impede the effectiveness of their vaccines because the needles on the syringe don't penetrate deep enough. I don't believe that for a minute.
I don't either.
So, and also For TB, it's drug-resistant now. So if you do get tuberculosis, you have very limited, options with modern medicine these days.
Wouldn't it be easier to close our borders and keep people with TB from coming into this country?
That would be a start. But there are herbs that fight TB that inhibit the tuberculosis pathogen. So people might want to get some echinacea root, comfrey root, slippery elm, mullein, chickweed, marshmallow, and lobelia. And guess who has all that stuff?
Guys, it couldn't be the apothecary, thepowerherbs.com, could it?
Oh, yes, it is. Absolutely. So people have empowering tools at their disposal, delivered and promised of by God, because the herbs are here for the service of man. They're here for the healing of the nations, and we already know God can't lie. So check it out, thepowerherbs.com. If people want to catalog, the number is 866-229-3663. And I know I'm out of time.
Just about. We have 10 seconds left, which is long enough for me to say this. Wendy Wilson. Wendy will be back next Wednesday. She's at thepowerherbs.com at 866-229-3663. Thank you, Wendy. Bye. Melody and I will take a break, a couple of commercials, be right back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in an untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate in those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad-spectrum immune-boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Or take your chances with the bad boys. Call Apothecary Herbs toll-free, 866-229-3663, or online, thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
Well, the Fed did delay their rate hike, and they certainly have market concerns. And, you know, I had all the numbers and so forth, what she said and didn't say, and, you know, all their little concerns about, you know, if we inch it up, this. And it's like, you know what? It doesn't even really matter. The point of it is they can't do it. They won't do it for the next couple of years. And she even states that. There's not going to be any rate increases for 17 and 18, for 2018. I mean, how can you raise rates?
Janet Yellen actually said that they're not going to raise it for perhaps another 2 years.
Perhaps 2 years, 17 and 18. Not in those words, but it's pretty much what she said. And, you know, that's what I said. It's all about they can't do it, not with the type of economy that we have. And she should be. You're going to hear reports, well, you know, she was too late to the game to raise rates. You know what? No, she wasn't. She just couldn't do it.
She was too early the last time. She was too early the first time she did it, and the stock market fell like a stone.
And that's why she can't do it ever.
Yeah, that may be.
That's why she can't do it. It's all about Wall Street. It's all about keeping that money in there. She can't raise rates. What do you think people in fixed income would do? Oh,
she has to keep talking about it.
She has to keep talking about it.
Right, because
keeps everybody.
Well, it implies, as long as she's talking about raising rates, it implies that the Federal Reserve still has options open for a rate hike this summer, for example. But if one has options, okay, as long as we have, well, we could raise rates, we didn't, but we could. right? As long as you have options, one has power to choose. When one is powerless, he has no options. Therefore, when the Federal Reserve, I'm wondering, is the Federal Reserve really trying to keep its options open? That's what a statement from one of the articles that I read, which says from Yahoo Finance, try to keep its options open. Are they? Is that what they said? Well, we could raise it this summer, you know, or maybe the next fall. Hard to say, but we could. Are they really trying to keep their options open for raising interest rates this summer? Or is the Federal Reserve trying to keep the illusion of having options and therefore still having power and control over the economy? I mean, even if it was true, the Federal Reserve could not come out and declare that the U.S. and global economies are so screwed up that the Fed is powerless to provide any remedy, and that therefore there's not one chance in heck that they'll raise interest rates this summer or even this year. They can't say we don't have the option. If you get my drift? Because if they admit that the Fed has no options, it can't raise it. Can't raise it now, can't raise it in the summer, can't do it next. It's an admission that the Fed is paralyzed. It's impotent. It's powerless to act and cause positive change in the economy. If that were true, the Fed would implicitly admit that it had become irrelevant. We don't need them. If they can't change the interest rates, what can they do? What do you got for them? What have you done lately?
What they provide is the confidence that the markets needs. That's what they still do. And if Donald Trump gets elected, he's going to can her at her the end of her trial and bring someone in. So, I mean,
you get Hillary. If he gets elected, Hillary would be available. Let her run it. Yeah, what about that? Janet, you got to go. Hillary, come on in here.
Janet really does have to go. I mean, she really does. I mean, it's, you know, so they talk about a possible rate increase at the end of the year, maybe, but you know, they're not going to have it. They're not going to do it. They can't, because I'll tell you what, the way things are going and changed in just the past few days, I expect by the end of the year, all kinds of things will be happening.
Well, you know,
are going to start seeing this unwind as we did in 2008, as I have said, you know, we're going to see the unwinding last year during the summer, and we're going to see it now, and it starts in June. There's something about the month of June, but we saw it in 2007. We saw it in 2008. We're seeing it again. And
one of the things about this is whether or not the Federal Reserve raises interest rates today or sometime this summer or later in the fall or the winter this year, what are we talking about? We got all this big fuss about, oh, my God, will they or will they not raise interest rates? We're not talking about raising interest rates by 5%. We're talking about maybe increasing interest rates by something like 0.25% to 0.5%. It's a triviality.
But that just shows you how fragile.
I know. That's where I'm going with this. The whole thing, the Fed doesn't have enough power to just simply say, look, raise the interest rates by 0.25%, 0.75%, whatever. They should be able to just do that as a matter of just it's like taking out the trash. Why not? And they can't, which is evidence that they are caught in a bind that they don't have the power to confront. So,
my question is it truly so much the economy? Certainly with higher rates, you're going to have the housing market come back a little bit and so forth. Maybe a little bit of spending will slow down. But is it really all Wall Street? Look what happened in December. Look at the 3 months. And it's just not our markets, it's world markets. That's all that it's focused about is Wall Street.
I know. I think that's a false focus. I think the focus should be on how big is the national debt, right? If we have low interest rates, we can afford more debt. If we have higher interest rates, it puts additional strain on the government and on debtors in general.
That's right.
And
all those multinational
debt-based monetary system, everybody's so deep in debt that if they raise things 0.25%, the whole house of cards could collapse.
Down.
That's what the problem is, dealing with the debtors, including
Wall Street.
The government of the United States of America. Wall Street may be the least. They're there as a trigger. I'm not saying that they're a trivial.
Well, it's that confidence deal. I mean, it's all about keeping the system going through confidence. You got to keep having that new money coming in to keep the Ponzi scheme going. So it's.
And there's the problem that they have. You know, people sit back and they say, and there have been people in Congress and people who should know what's going on in the economy, and they say, well, you don't have to worry about the national debt because the Federal Reserve can always print the money to pay it off. Right? Really? Zimbabwe could print the money. They printed quadrillions of Zimbabwean dollars, and did that prevent their problems over there? It did not. They had the capacity to print, I have no idea how many trillions of, at least billions, maybe trillions of marks back in the Weimar Republic. Yeah, they can print the currency, but can they print the confidence? And everybody who studies, looks at the money system, everybody knows or has heard that the whole thing is based on public confidence, and that's what the Federal Reserve can't print. Yeah, they can print the dollars like Parker Brothers handing out Monopoly money. No big deal. But can they print the confidence to go along with it? And the answer is no. So there's their problem. They, you know, and the illusion and the claims by some that we can print our way out of the debt, well, it's just irrational. That's crazy.
You
print
can't.
Enough, print next $20 trillion
yeah.
to pay off the national debt, assuming that's all the national debt is. Print an extra $20 trillion, flood it into the U.S. economy or the global economy. What's going to happen there? It's going to cause, it has to cause some significant inflation. Ultimately, even the Federal Reserve has to be accountable to some degree. They can't just spin that currency out of thin air. They've got to use it to purchase bonds from the government. And there's got to be the illusion that someone's going to pay $20 trillion to the government that issued the bonds that are being issued to wipe out the existing national debt. That's irrational, right? It doesn't work that way. It can't work that way. It can't say, listen, I'm going to borrow $20 trillion from Melody in order to pay off my $20 trillion debt, $20 trillion national debt. I still owe $20 trillion. Somebody still owes. We can use this. Here, let me, write me a check, Melody. Work, write one out for $20 trillion. I'll send it in, and they can deduct it from the national debt, and we'll all be happy. Except who is going to make good on your check? Okay? Do you really have $20 trillion? Neither does anyone else. Again, what it just points to is the real implication. The Fed is trying to maintain the illusion that it has some magical powers here. They have pretty much shot their wad. They don't have any more power to deal with the situation that's in front of us. And all by itself, that should be great cause for concern. Not because people need to worship and love the Federal Reserve, but who's running this thing?
That's what it's like out there. It's like no one is running anything. It's just like they're just
acting. Everything's
keeping
don't
their
pay
fingers
no attention. Just
crossed.
Keep moving. There's nothing to see here. Just keep moving. No, something's going on here.
As long as that Dow is at 18,000, nobody really cares. Yeah. But it won't be there much longer. And you're going to see. You know what? Just from this weekend, it shows how quick things can change. And you can be going along thinking, well, you know, it's fairly quiet and so forth for, and then bang, something happens. And it just seems like everything changes. That it's like the whole mood, the whole, you know, it's just like everything, regardless of what the situation is, it changes. I don't want to call it the feelings, but the,
there's no stability here that people can count on. I mean, it's like taking drugs. You can get high for a while if you want to take drugs and you can feel pretty good, but pretty soon the drugs are going to wear off and all of a sudden you're going to go into some sort of a depression. It's the same thing with our economy. They've been using their different tricks and devices to kick the can down the road and everybody can stay happy because everything's under control, only it's not. we are running out of drugs, and pretty soon we're going to have to confront reality without the benefit of easy credit. When that happens, you better hope you've got savings, and those savings had better be in a form that you can access. You don't have to worry about that, the form of your savings being destroyed by electronics in the sense of digital currency or by banks or by inflation or whatever, which again brings us back savings, savings, savings. We talked about it yesterday, in a form that can't be taken away from you.
There were a couple of other little reports that were out today. Industrial production a day declined last month as manufacturing production fell. And industrial production.
7 months in a row, if I understand correctly.
Industrial production is a measure of everything made by factories, mines, and utilities. That fell seasonally adjusted 0.4% in May. Manufacturing output slid. It led by a 4.2% drop in production of motor vehicles and parts. Overall, factory activity is down 0.1% from a year earlier. We had a little bit of increase in the mining production, very minor. And this was the first increase since, what, August 2015. Coal mining rebounded a little bit, but you had your oil and gas extraction. That was a little changed. The overall production was down 1.4% in the 12 months through May. This is what I wanted to say on this. The potential output, the capacity use, it's a measure of how much industries are making as a share of potential output. That fell 0.4%, 4 percentage points to 74.9. The interesting part is this is 5.1 percentage points below the historical average. So again,
put on a happy face.
Put on it, yeah.
Da, 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 da,
another reason da, da, she couldn't da, da. Raise rates. But we also had a little bit of the PPI came in. That measures the change in the prices that U.S. firms receive goods and services. That increased also 0.4% in May. And, go ahead. Hmm. That was due mainly to you have a little bit of global oil prices that have climbed and so forth.
Yeah, but there's articles out. There's one here I'm looking at. Enormous inventories to keep a lid on oil price. That's from the International Energy Agency. A huge overhang in oil stocks lingering across the world will keep a cap on any further oil price rises, even as supply and demand move toward balance by the end of the year. All right, supply and demand might balance out by the end of the year, but it won't matter all that much because we have this huge oversupply of oil. There are tankers parked around the world that are full of oil. All right? They have more oil and they know what to do with it. They've got it stored and stacked and in ponds and barrels and wherever. There's so much oil available that the prices are not going to go up. These large oil inventories will, in fact, push the price further down. Another article from CNBC talking about the same subject. They are predicting that, and they're talking about China. Problem with China. China's exporting so much crude oil, it's absolutely insane. They're importing about 1 million barrels a day more than they're actually consuming. All right, China put 787,000 barrels of oil per day into storage in the first quarter, but they've only got 135, they've stockpiled about 135 million barrels of oil. They only have storage capacity for 155 million barrels of oil, which means China is about to stop purchasing oil. They've been over-purchasing by close to 1 million barrels a day, according to this article, and they are about within the next couple of weeks, at which point price of crude oil, they're predicting price of crude oil will begin to drop and could drop down to 40 and maybe into the 30s. Too much of an oil supply glut is available right now. Those who are counting on oil prices going up are likely to be disappointed for some time. We need to take a break, Melody, and we can get back. I can hear you got something you want to say, but we'll get it when we get back from the commercial.
Do you hear me gasping?
Commerce, commerce, commerce. We have to do the wheels of commerce. Got to do those commercials, Melody. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
stress, financial obligations, or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adeske with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival. Did you have something you wanted to add? We were talking about the oil glut, the global oil glut when we stopped for commercials. Did you have something you wanted to add to that topic, Melody?
Well, I just wanted to mention, I've been talking a little bit more about this on the Thursday's program, but I believe that the rise in oil to the 50 level was in part due to the wildfires in Canada and also what's happening in Nigeria. And I think now that we're beginning to see the prices drop a little bit, you have the wildfires in Canada, that's no worries there anymore, but you're still having problems in Nigeria. And I think maybe we might be experiencing oil going to the price of a true supply and demand situation. It just really does depend on what those militants in Nigeria continue to do. They have taken off quite a bit of oil. There's reports that Nigeria is going to play a big role in global oil prices going forward. These militants continue to blow up. You have Chevron over there. It's going to take months in order to repair some of those pipelines. And you just don't really hear a lot about this. You don't, at least the news that I listen to and so forth, you don't hear about what is going on and whether the government can come in and do some negotiating with these groups, these militant groups, to so they quit blowing up the pipelines and so forth.
The only negotiation is you got to give them a cut of the profits.
Cut of the profits, exactly.
That's all. If you give them enough of the oil line, let them own enough of the oil lines and the refineries or whatever they're blowing up currently, then they won't blow up their own stuff. If you have any idea that you're going to maintain, and once you start that, handing it over to revolutionaries, how long before they demand complete ownership?
Mm-hmm.
Nigeria is going to be problematic for a considerable period of time. I don't think it'll be easy for anyone to extract oil. Everybody knows it's vulnerable. They can't protect the pipelines, miles and miles of pipelines. You can't put a guard on every lineal foot of the pipeline to protect it from potential radicals, revolutionaries, thugs.
Well, too, it kind of makes you wonder who, because, with oil prices down to 25, they got creamed with the drop in oil prices.
Not the revolutionaries.
Well, the governments, the country itself, got decimated, with the, price of oil dropping.
What's that to
the that's what happened to Venezuela. I mean, they were floating along, but it was the drop in oil prices that, put them in the situation where they are today. Well, overspending the government, but the drop in oil prices, was the, final nail.
Well,
with all these emerging markets, I mean, that's what happened to the BRICS. I mean, all of a sudden the oil prices were dropping, and a lot of these emerging countries and so forth. That's what they were dependent on, those higher prices.
But the reason that's significant to these countries, some of these countries and some of the producers and whatever, is because they have incurred quite a lot of debt in order to oil system that they've put together. Now the revolutionaries, they don't have any debt. If they can go in and bomb a few pipelines and set a couple of oil refineries on ablaze, they get them. And they don't have to worry about the debt. And therefore, they're not concerned if the price of oil drops back to $10 a barrel. That's big money to the revolutionaries because they don't have any debt. We'll just take the stuff over by force and make whatever money we make is good. So they have a huge advantage compared to the corporations and governments that are trying to profit off this oil because they don't have an investment. They have no debt. Just steal them. How much did your car cost? Didn't cost anything. I stole it. That's a pretty good deal compared to people that are paying their monthly car payments. Right? And that's the kind of world that we're in right now. It's breaking down. And the world is increasingly, it's falling into the hands of individuals. Right? Governments talk about asymmetrical warfare, where we have the mighty United States, for example, with all its tanks and airplanes and bombers and missiles and the rest of that, being bedeviled by a virtual handful of radicals running around with a rifle. 100 rounds of ammunition, and they're causing a lot of trouble. They don't have, it doesn't cost them much. It doesn't cost these radicals much to actually engage. Now, it's dangerous, and they could get killed and whatever, but I'm saying in terms of financial, if the guy's got a tent and a couple of candy bars, he's good to go. They have a huge advantage in this asymmetrical warfare, and something like that's happening in Nigeria, and something like that is happening in this country where we have hackers that break into computers and into internet networks and whatever, and they are able to steal funds, right, that are squirreled away, or steal credit cards and the credit card information, whatever. One little guy can do a lot of damage and perhaps even a lot of good. You got Elon Musk fooling around with the Tesla automobiles and maybe flights to Mars or wherever. It's possible for individuals to have an extraordinary impact as compared to what might have been true 15, 20 years ago and for most of our history. Almost anybody can be a Thomas Edison right now. Got a garage? Got an inclination to invent things? You can do this. I don't mean that I can and everybody in the audience can, but if you've got brains enough, it can be done. It is no longer, thanks to computers, it's no longer necessary to make a huge investment in terms of the impact that's possible. You can start out with just a little bit of just a good idea. Next thing you know, you can be fabulously wealthy. It can happen. Doesn't happen to everybody. It's not just I'm not saying it's easy, but I'm saying it's possible to a degree that wasn't possible in the past. And that applies to people who want to do something positive. It also applies to people who want to do something negative. What happened in Orlando? Got one guy down there, allegedly, with a rifle. One guy with a rifle, and all of a sudden the whole country is bouncing around. All right? He's had enormous effect, one little guy. And his political effect has been substantial. Where's it going? Don't know, but we live in a world where the disaffected can have disproportionate impact if they care to have that impact. If they have brains enough to do anything, they can do things. So what's the next novelty? Here's one from
leave it up to you.
Defense and Foreign Affairs. The headline is, Russia is reportedly set to release Clinton's intercepted email. Some of you may know that some hacker in Europe, I don't remember his name.
Anonymous?
Something like that. I don't recall. But this guy is recognized as one of the hacker gurus of the world. And Russia was following him because he'd hacked into Kremlin files. And Russia got wise to it, and they said, we've got to keep an eye on this guy. And while they were watching him, this guy hacked into Hillary Clinton's servers and downloaded all of her email. Well, Russia captured the email. They copied what this guy had downloaded, what he'd stolen from Hillary. Russia had copied from him. Now, Russia has this bundle of email, and they have been threatening to release it for, I don't know, a month or more, maybe two, I'm not sure. Yeah.
Well, overnight, supposedly, a hacker with ties to Russia hacked into the DNC and obtained Trump's, the information that they've been gathering.
No, the opposition. They've been gathering on Trump. Yeah,
gathering on Trump. Yeah,
he didn't break into Trump's files.
No, they were drunk. They went in. Well, he wouldn't have been with the DNC. They went into the DNC.
No, and it's just evidence. What do you do to keep a secret in this world? The first thing is you don't tell anybody, and the second thing is you don't put it on anything that's hooked up to the internet.
Is everything on the internet true?
The only way to keep a secret now is probably write it in a book. Nobody reads books. All right, you could write it in a book. You could publish it. They'll put it on shelves. Nobody will read it. The secret will be safe. But if you put it in digital form, you can't count on it. In any case, here we have Russia is threatening the Russian government could in the near future release the text of email messages intercepted from U.S. presidential candidate Hillary Clinton's private email server from the time she was U.S. Secretary of State. Now, what they say, and this is from Defense and Foreign Affairs, a publication called Defense and Foreign Affairs, they say the release would allegedly prove Secretary Clinton had, in fact, laid open U.S. secrets to foreign interception. It's in violation of U.S. law. The server had been targeted, and they claim that the Russians have evidence that her server had been targeted and hacked by foreign intelligence services. So is Hillary so dumb she'd risk exposing U.S. secrets to foreign intelligence? And the answer is not exactly. All governments use secrecy as an excuse to keep their real adversaries in the dark. But who are the real adversaries of most governments? And the answer is the people that the government presumes to rule. They'll tell you, oh, we're here to protect you against the evil Russians and their evil empire and or the dangerous Muslims or whatever. The only thing the government is fearful about is people like you and me. Right? They don't want the public to understand what it's up to. Hillary's not worried about whatever Russia might know about the U.S. secrets. She's worried about whatever the American people might know. Now, that may sound like a peculiar claim, but back in the 1990s, I wrote an article on this back in the 1990s, and in the early 1990s, the United States was building a new embassy in Moscow, and the Soviet Union was building even the 1980s, perhaps. And the Soviet Union was building, I think it was the 1980s, the Soviet Union was building a new embassy in Washington, D.C. Now, the United States embassy in Moscow was built down in a low spot where it would be hard for communication, and it was common knowledge that virtually every brick, beam, whatever, every component that went into the U.S. embassy in Moscow had some sort of a listening device in it. The Soviet embassy in Washington, D.C. was built on a high point, highest point in the city, and they were able to better intercept microwave communication that was going to and from the government from that high location. And you could sit back and say, why was our government so stupid? And the truth is the government doesn't care what the Russians know. They're not the adversary. The government uses secrecy as an excuse to keep you people in the dark and me. They don't want us to find out what they're up to. They want us to believe that government is here to help us. And as long as we succumb to that claim, government is happy. So the point I'm trying to get to is Hillary isn't necessarily worried about what the Russians find out. I've read Chinese and rest, that sort of thing. Top secret, no big deal. Right? But she is concerned, I suspect, about the people. U.S. sources indicated that extensive Department of Justice probe was more focused on the possibility that the private server was used to protect messaging in which Secretary Clinton allegedly discussed quid pro quo transactions with private donors to the Clinton Foundation in exchange for influence on U.S. policy. You see the point? This is coming from a publication called, again, Defense and Foreign Affairs. They're talking about Russia's position on this, and they're saying Hillary didn't want the government, the local government in this country, to find out that she was engaged in fraud. It could put her in jail. She wasn't worried about the Russians. She's not worried about the Red Chinese. She's worried about evidence that she's taking bribes in through the Clinton Foundation in order to perform political favors. The one thing that's interesting about this is apparently Russian President Putin, a former communist, by threatening to release these emails, he's going to do harm to Hillary. It indicates that he would prefer to do business with the billionaire Trump, the billionaire capitalist Trump, rather than the leftist Hillary. Right? Is Russia intentionally meddling in U.S. politics? And the answer is yeah. Now, it's not exactly a surprise, but there's a certain amount of irony. We've got a communist who'd rather do business in the next after the next election with a billionaire capitalist than with a leftist Hillary. Interesting. I don't know. It's another one of those little markers for an election that is unlike any election the world's ever seen, or this country's ever seen before. Just nuts, bizarre, insane. We had in the first part of the program, Wendy Wilson was talking about some sort of an aerosol they could use for a vaccine. I'm wondering if they haven't put some sort of an aerosol that includes LSD in it. They're already dispersing it to the public. This whole situation is just getting curiouser and curiouser, crazier and crazier, and it suggests that everyone listening would do well to prepare because it can't hold together. You need to have some savings. You need to have some preparation, food, water, whatever. You need to get some because we are facing potentially dangerous times. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
All night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.